Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined as always by Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. And this week, why did it cost $600 to purchase an EpiPen, and what can we do about it? You all know the story, I assume. Basically, a major news outlet, national news outlet, found out that the cost of an EpiPen had gone up multiple times to $600 or so. And the cost of it is so much less than that. Of course, the West Virginia angle is that Heather Bresch, who is the daughter of Senator Joe Manchin, is the CEO of Mylan. And Mylan is a company that makes EpiPens and was founded in West Virginia and still has operations here. Lori, what was your reaction when you heard about this story?
Well, I knew about it because I've been buying EpiPens since 2010. Both of my older sons are allergic to nuts. It was, I think, $80 in 2010 when I started. $80 to me, I have insurance, and so that was what I had to pay. And then, you know, it just seemed like every year it would go up, you know, another $50. Yeah, so I was not surprised to hear. And kudos to the media, really, for bringing it to light.
Did you, at the time, when you saw those prices going up and up and up, did you ever question it?
Well, it was interesting. Last year, what happened was I went to the pharmacy for the EpiPens, and the pharmacist said, your insurance, I have PEIA, your insurance is not covering this anymore. It's too expensive. They are instead covering a different, an alternative. And it was called the AviQ, and I got it, and it was basically the same thing. It actually talked to you and told you how to inject it, which was a nice innovation. And so what had happened there was that market forces had been at work, and it had gotten so expensive that PEIA had said, no, we're not going to pay this, and they had gone to this alternative. Unfortunately, what happened was AviQ then got recalled. There was an issue with how much it was injecting, and, you know, probably out of an excess of caution, they did a recall, which a year ago left the EpiPen as almost the only alternative. There's another device that almost no one has ever heard of. So technically, they do have one competitor. But, you know, when your only competition ceases to be the competition anymore, that's just a recipe for the price to go up, really, no matter what industry or product you're talking about.
I mean, this seems like, Rick, an example of a case where the free market didn't work like it is expected to work. How would you remedy that? What would you suggest happen?
Well, I think Adam Smith once said that anytime certain people in the industry got together, they conspire against the public. So, I think this is a case where there weren't a lot of market forces, and markets really are good for some things. Did you hear me say that, you guys?
Markets are good for some things.
For some things, yeah. They're just not divine. I have a question for Lori, though, which I think people will be interested in. In daily life, I'm seeing your kids. They're really cute, and I'm sure they're really smart and everything. What is it like day-to-day life to have a kid with this kind of allergies where you have to think about this all the time when they're with you, when they're not? Because there are a lot of people out there in that boat.
Yeah, I found that when they were younger, my middle son was allergic to eggs and milk when he was really young, and seriously, scarily allergic to egg in particular. That was really stressful and really difficult because those are kind of esoteric allergies. People kind of don't take them as seriously, I think. Nuts, the nut allergy has, I think, seeped into our consciousness enough because so many people have it. So many kids have it. For example, our kids' school is completely nut-free. You can't bring any, you know, peanut butter, no nut, anything in for lunch or snack. So now that they're only allergic to nuts, and really my older son is allergic to peanut, which is the scary one. I'm not as worried about almonds. People don't die from almond allergies generally. So yeah, I feel comforted that it's nuts in our case. But again, there are people who are allergic to all kinds. There are people who are allergic to apples, you know, who's ever heard of bee stings, things like that. So yeah, it is scary. And it's scary to send your kid away from you in particular, where you're not there to kind of control it and you know, oversee it.
Have you had to use one?
Yeah, when my older son was very young, I think he was like 18 months old.
It just worked quickly, took care of it?
Super quickly. He was, you know, his lips were turning blue, and he kind of slumped over, and you stick that thing in the leg, and it's adrenaline, really. That's basically what epinephrine is.
And the adrenaline isn't what's expensive. Even the delivery device isn't that expensive. And so Do you blame Mylan Industries for jacking up the price of the EpiPen, Lori?
I mean, look, I mean, I do. I think that it was morally contemptible, but that's not really the interesting question. The question is how they were able to do it. And they're able to do it in part, in large part, because of the way the FDA approves these things. It's not just a medicine. Epinephrine, as you said, is very cheap, not under patent anymore. It's the device. And devices are just different. In sort of defense of the FDA, it's harder to handle generic devices. When you're talking about a generic drug, that's a chemical compound, and it's pretty easy relatively to, you know, say, is this the same thing? Okay, then yes, we approve it. There was a generic EpiPen that was up for approval really recently, I think in May, and it got rejected. We don't exactly know. It's not public why it was rejected, but it's hard when you're talking about a little machine. Is it close? Is it the same thing? Is it different? And of course, Mylan has every incentive to pressure the FDA to not approve a competitor. And, you know, they spend millions of dollars in lobbying, just like a lot of pharmaceuticals do. So, yeah, I think if the one thing that I would do if I were the president would be to find some way to make the FDA interested in how competitive the market is for certain things. One thing we could do, for example, in Europe, there are competitors to the EpiPen. So have a presumption that if something is approved for use in, like, Germany, it's probably going to be okay here, you know? So maybe lower the regulatory hurdle for them to operate over here.
So the incentives at the FDA are entirely around making sure that everything is 1,000% safe, because that's what they get punished for. But meanwhile, there's no incentive that says, okay, how do we make sure that the drugs are affordable and, right, and available here in the country? And hasn't this, Rick, been the failure in part of the Affordable Care Act? The Affordable Care Act has expanded coverage, but more recently, in particular, the last couple of years, the healthcare prices continue to outpace inflation. And this seems like one example of why that's happening.
I think there have been ways when people try to take on the price of pharmaceuticals by using the muscle you have from a big market like the Veterans Administration or something like that to get better deals. West Virginia almost went there. Do you remember a few years back when they backed away because I think there were more pharma lobbyists than there were legislators in the Capitol at the time? But situations like this, you can have competition, you can have regulation, and what we're seeing here is you have public opinion, which is kind of interesting. What I'm curious about is, how did this become viral, you guys? I think I was traveling out of state, and this just kaboom exploded everywhere, all over the country.
Forgive me, I forget who broke the story.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't remember, but I think it's just one of those things where it lives so close to you. I mean, Lori's talking about her son's life depends on this thing, and she knew exactly that the price was high. And so when someone finally did the story that explained how much had gone up, I think it just tapped into a lot of people's anger that the system is rigged against regular people. It doesn't seem fair. It might be legal, but it doesn't seem fair.
Well, and you have the CEO, as you mentioned, who is, you know, the daughter of a senator, and her compensation is $18 million a year, which is certainly an eye-popping amount of money anywhere, particularly here in West Virginia.
We're going to continue this discussion of the Affordable Care Act in just a minute. But first, we are in the middle here of our No Rant, No Slant membership campaign. You probably have heard about the EpiPen story in other places, and I'd like to think that you might not have heard it in such depth with such great individual storytelling and with such respect for different opinions. And so that's what we do for you here every day. It's what you depend on as a listener to The Front Porch. What's happening right now is that Xander, our board op and engineer and our producer, he's going to go back, he's going to cut down the show, he's going to make sure it sounds nice, he's going to put it on the internet. His time is valuable. It costs money. And so we'd ask for you to support that. Call 800-RADIO-87 and become a member, or go online at wvpublic.org and click that Donate Now button. You'll see lots of options for becoming a one-time giver or a sustaining giver. And you'll support the sort of no rant, no slant journalism that you've come to expect. Thanks.
All right, Scott, I have a comment here. I'm a big fan of Emily Dickinson, and she had a great line, tell the truth, but tell it slant. So just saying, you know.
I'm anti-Emily Dickinson.
Are we exempted at all from this no rant, no slant thing? Because I feel like sometimes
this is where we politely
sometimes I rant.
Right? Yeah, we rant politely on this podcast.
Okay.
It's like fireside spats, you know, or something.
Fireside spats. Everyone will tune in for that. Wow. Okay. Thank you for undermining my entire pitch message.
Anytime, Scott. Anytime.
No problem. So we're going to talk now about the Affordable Care Act in West Virginia. And some interesting news, the two leading gubernatorial candidates, Bill Cole on the Republican side and Jim Justice on the Democratic side, have both announced in a newspaper story in the Gazette Mail where I heard it, that they are going to support the Medicaid expansion that took place under the Affordable Care Act. Not so surprising for a Democrat to say that, but very much so for a Republican. Republicans and Republican governors have been divided about whether they will accept Medicaid expansion or whether they would turn down that money. And West Virginia accepted it. And because of that, we've had a huge decrease in the number of uninsured people and a huge increase in the number of mainly adults joining the Medicaid rolls. So, Rick, what's going on here? Why do you think that both candidates are saying they would keep the Medicaid expansion?
Well, for one thing, I'm really glad they did. I think I would like to say a big thank you to both candidates, to Jim Justice and to Bill Cole for this. I think it's a decent humanitarian thing. Also, I think it makes sense for where else can you find an investment where down the line you put in $1 and you get $9 back legally?
This is the $1 state money for $9 of federal money.
Yeah, eventually the state will have to pick up 10% of the cost of expansion over several years' time. But I don't think there's anywhere else you can get that kind of return legally. And seriously, you go to any hospital in this state, it's largely kept in business by things like Medicaid. My daughter's a psychologist who does opium counseling, and people are getting treatment now that couldn't before. People who are being diverted from prison or even getting out are making sure they have the kind of coverage and treatment and prevention stuff. And then like these are like working people. I think it's 178,000 who've gotten coverage for it. And I've talked to people. It's literally changed and saved their lives. So thanks to both of them. And I think citizens need to make sure that to help them follow through.
Let me ask a political question, Lori, which is, why would a Republican candidate in West Virginia perhaps have a different opinion on Medicaid expansion than some of their Republican governor counterparts in other states?
It's very hard to take things away from people once you've given them. And I mean, I think that explains it really more than anything. If Bill Cole were to come out now and say, oh, I don't know, we're not sure, we might roll it back, I think the firestorm over that would really just swallow every other issue right now. So I think politically it's wise. Bill Cole knows as well as anybody else and a lot more than most people how difficult it is going to be to pay for when finally that bill does come due, even paying for 10% of it because Medicaid is, you know, so expensive and such a big program is going to put an additional strain on the state budget.
Other states are dealing with the same issue. Over in Kentucky, they expanded Medicaid under a Democratic governor, and then Governor Bevin won office, and he's a Republican, and he's asked for a waiver to be able to change Medicaid in Kentucky, to be able to do things like ask for copays and other restrictions. Rick, what's your opinion of trying to make Medicaid a little bit more like private insurance for people who are on it?
There are several waiver programs around the country that are not that extreme. I think the Kentucky one's pretty punitive. I think it's really designed to get people off of it. I'm not sure it'll get approved by the feds. But you know, there was a study recently published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that compared Kentucky with Arkansas, with Texas, a state that Kentucky implemented Medicaid. Arkansas did a waiver plan, and Texas didn't do it at all. And there were huge, Arkansas and Kentucky, there were huge gains in coverage. People are happy. They felt healthier. They used emergency rooms less. They're more likely to have a medical home. So, I mean, there's all these payoffs that, I mean, there's a job impact. There's bringing money into the state. There's also people's lives and health care. So, again, I'm just grateful. I mean, I hope things stay on their current course. We're talking about over 200,000 people in any given year of coverage because there's some churning. And at any time, I think it's about 178,000 now. That's like one out of every 10 people, adults. Well, more than that.
My personal experience with covering Medicaid as a former reporter, whenever I did a story,
I remember a story about a woman who had two children, and the two children had Medicaid, and she didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was just a story about how she depends on Medicaid for her kids' insurance. And how many emails I got from people, angry emails, you know, questioning whether or not these children deserve Medicaid, whether or not she should have had these children in the first place. You know, if you can't support these children, why do you have them? Why do I have to pay for their health insurance? And I just wonder whether that resentment of among those sorts of people will just grow as more able-bodied adults are expanded onto the Medicaid program.
Well, these are mostly working adults, too, who can't afford coverage. When Mitt Romney designed his plan in Massachusetts, the Republican governor there, he came up with a similar thing. I think Medicaid was to cover people up to around 100%, and then there was an exchange to do the rest. And again, that was a program which I think the industry supported and everything else. One thing I'm thinking about, too, is like there are many Republican governors who have supported this. I'm thinking closer to home is John Kasich, and Senate Finance Chair in West Virginia, Mike Hall, said, you know, if we don't do this, we'll be cutting off our nose to spite our face. And this is a man who really knows state budget and state finance.
That might be the other reality. In West Virginia, the hospitals in particular are so dependent on Medicaid and Medicare funding, more so than in other states, that not taking it could be really catastrophic just financially. It's just a very practical thing.
You know, Medicaid has traditionally been seen as a little bit inferior to private insurance. There are a lot of doctors who won't accept it. There are reasons that they won't accept it. The reimbursement rates tend to be lower. There's a lot of paperwork associated with it. It takes a lot longer to get reimbursed. And I think one danger is of moving toward a kind of two-tier system where we have a whole bunch of people on Medicaid and it's not as great. You know, you talk about emergency room visits. In some places, emergency room visits have actually gone up because people say, well, wait, I'm insured now, but I can't find a doctor. So I'm going to the emergency room, you know, for something that really isn't an emergent situation because I actually can't get in the door to see a real doctor. And meanwhile, at the other end of the market, you have people who are signing up for these concierge cares where it's not insurance and you have your kind of own doctor that you can email and you get seen right away. So That's one danger as we, you know, sign more and more people up for this, it has traditionally been seen as a little bit of an inferior program.
Just a short sort of pitch for a place you can find more information about this. We have a project called Health News Appalachia where Carol Lofton, the reporter's done a great series of stories about these very issues. Some of the holes, frankly, in the Affordable Care Act that we're finding as it goes on, some of the benefits and the issues. So go to our website, wvpublic.org, and check out some of these stories. They talk about things just like what Lori is talking about, real West Virginians dealing with these issues.
A couple more points, if I could. Uncompensated care and bad debt has dropped dramatically for hospitals since doing this. And there was a recent study by Kaiser Health News that shows in places that haven't expanded Medicaid, rural hospitals in particular are really taking a hit. I mean, it's got a huge ripple effect in terms of business, employment, health care.
It's like an experiment almost because you can look at the states that did it and the states that didn't. And like hospitals and places that didn't take the Medicaid expansion are really suffering. So, you know, we didn't have that experience here because we took it. But it appears that the hospitals are in healthier shape financially because of it.
Like in Tennessee, when they came close to doing it last year, the Nashville Chamber of Commerce and several other business groups supported expansion. You
know, and what's happening is sort of a stick is that the money that used to be paid the hospitals to help pay for uncompensated care, they're called DSH payments, disproportionate share payments. That money is going away because the assumption was that the hospitals would be taking expanded Medicaid. And so they're getting hit both ways. They're losing their DSH payments. At the same time, they're not getting in these other states. They're not getting the increased Medicaid payments. So, I mean, I think a conservative answer might be bring back DSH and things like that for the states that chose not to do Medicaid expansion, and that might help their hospitals.
Can I tell a story of Lori told a story about her kids. I remember the story I heard from a woman who was covered by expansion. It's like went into effect January 1st, 2014, and her husband had this really bad condition in his brain, I think, and he nearly died, and he didn't seek treatment. He waited until, you know, January 1st to actually seek treatment. And eventually it was okay, but they were afraid of all the costs and all the debt that would come up. And, you know, with Medicaid expansion, you're not stuck in a job you hate. It makes a job that doesn't pay well kind of like a good job because you're covered while you work.
I hope my wife or my father-in-law doesn't mind I tell this story. Father-in-law got laid off from a job he'd been in for more than 20 years when he was in his mid-50s, late 50s. And he immediately got other work, but didn't have health insurance. They cobra'd for as long as they could. And while they were cobra'ing the insurance, my mother-in-law was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. And so they were trying to figure out how to pay for her treatment and got to the point where she was actually skimping on her treatment because she was worried about how much it would cost. And she got an opportunistic infection in part because I believe she was skipping treatments and died. I mean, one of the best days for us was when he got on Medicare, finally. It was like a relief. It was like we made it. And now with the Affordable Care Act, that wouldn't happen. So I do think we should talk about the stories of the people who have been helped by it and remember the days when people, you know, it didn't matter whether you worked or not. You could lose your insurance at the drop of a hat. That being said, I don't think anyone would argue they're not severe and ongoing problems with how the health system is working today, right, Lori? I mean, what sort of solutions are there out there on the horizon?
Well, Medicaid has been around since 1965. If we wanted to just put a whole bunch of more people on Medicaid, we could have done that without also disrupting the individual market for health insurance, which was bad enough as it is and now is a complete disaster. These exchanges are just collapsing. You know, we were told that the average family was going to save $2,500. Instead, they're actually paying more. We were told if you like your plan, you could keep your plan. And that lasted about a year. So, yeah, the Medicaid story, in a way, is the one really big success story of the Affordable Care Act. And there are a lot of other problems with the other pieces of it.
Rick, I'll let you have the last word here.
Well, I was one of the people who thought there should be a public option to go with it on the exchange things because it would have at least provided a baseline there. There are other gains from it, like, you know, parents can keep kids on insurance up to age 26 now. So that's a big thing. And even though I think the markets or exchanges are not the way I would have gone, I think about 35,000 people in West Virginia have gotten covered that way. So definitely a work in progress.
What's your Bible verse of the week?
That is such a good question, Scott.
Physician, heal thyself.
That is in the Bible.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Oh, let's talk. Okay, there you go. Where's that from? Oh, this goes back to, I just looked it up.
Okay.
Thank you, Wikipedia. This goes back to what you talked about, the rejection of Jesus in his hometown in Nazareth. It's in Luke. Then he said, quote, "You will undoubtedly quote me this proverb, physician, heal yourself," meaning do miracles here in your hometown, like you did in Capernaum.
It's kind of like the quote when Ed Ravel was on here, you know, it's the same context. The prophet was not without honor except in his own home and among his own people. So I don't really show off much in Milton, let me just put it that way, except maybe at a karate class.
All right. And that's The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director, along with Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. Thank you for listening.